Hey, what up, Long Beach? We've got breaking news on this episode of the only podcast that updates you on everything happening with our local schools, their sports teams, and our community at large, as always, with the 562.org. I am JJ Fiddler.
I'm Mike Garbasio, and this podcast is part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post, where you can catch up on all of the latest education news in Long Beach, including some really troubling grades data that we just posted at lbpost.com.
And I'm Tyler Hendrickson. On the show this week, we're bringing on CIF Southern Section Commissioner, Long Beach guy, Rob Wygod. But before we tell you why, we wanted to remind you that the 562.org has merch available through the Long Beach LTD store. Visit longbeach.ltd and check out all of the collections, but specifically that 562 line of shirts and hoodies. Show your support for the 562 as the proceeds of those sales go to support what we do at the 562, and that's cover Long Beach sports and student athletes, everything.
$1,000 raised for the 562 from longbeach.ltd customers, so keep it up. And again, as Tyler mentioned, the 562 merch, which we will be so happy to see you wearing in person at games if we're ever all allowed to gather again, go get that, because all of those proceeds benefit the 562.
Well, we do it every week, but it feels especially important this week because we got to timestamp this thing. It is 3:30 on a Wednesday. If anything changes afterwards, do not blame us. We all saw this coming, unfortunately. This week, the news from the CIF Southern Section is that they have canceled the fall sports championship seasons. That means football, girls volleyball, cross country, and water polo will officially not have CIF Southern Section championship seasons in the 2021 school year.
And just to underline how historic that is, I mean, World War II, we had champions, you know, I mean, this will be the first time without a football championship, I think, going back to like World War I. So really a sad day. But also, I think there's a lot of miscommunication out there, which is why we were happy to have Rob on. But also just some stuff we can sort of provide. This is not the cancellation of those seasons. It is the cancellation of the CIF Southern Section Championships. The state championships were already canceled for those sports, just due to the logistical impossibility of bringing people together from all over the state for obvious reasons. But there is still very much the possibility that you will see a more league football season, a more league cross country season, that you'll see St. Anthony play some league games, or even possibly play in the Moore League. We really just don't know. But the fact is that when the stay-at-home orders are lifted, there are sports like cross country that are allowed legally to be contested even in the purple tier. And so we have heard from Lisa Ulmer, the Moore League secretary, that the LBUSD and its athletic directors will do everything they can to make some safe, healthy, and happy games happen for these kids so they can get some normalcy in their lives. But that is a story we will not be able to write the ending to for weeks and possibly months.
And so for those listening in that are thinking, so does that mean that we're not going to get high school football this year? Like, well, unfortunately, we still don't have a final answer. And ultimately, it's going to come down to the California Department of Public Health. So the CIF has said, hey, we wanted to have postseason. We're not going to be able to play enough league games to justify having a playoffs. So now it's up to the schools and the districts to find a way to compete. Unfortunately, in the current tier that we're in, as Mike mentioned, the purple tier, you cannot contest football. So the numbers of cases, hospitalizations, positivity rate, all that would have to drastically improve over the next couple months, or the California Department of Public Health would have to adjust their current guidelines to say, hey, we're not putting schools and we're not putting amateur athletics under this, you know, tiered system where it's tied to how well the numbers are doing. And it would provide more leeway for the schools to decide if they wanted to compete. Otherwise, it's just going to be left up to the, you know, the club football that's been happening outside of the health orders, or teams playing in other states that's currently going on in Arizona.
I wrote a column a couple weeks ago about how we're going to need to get creative to get as many games in. Well, here's the opportunity. Shoot your shot, Long Beach Unified School District. You've got an opportunity now to try to get these kids on the field in a variety of ways. It's there. The CIF Southern Section basically moving aside to let these leagues and these school districts figure it out for themselves and get these kids back on the field, because that's what everybody wants to see. Now, before we get to our interview with Rob Wygod, I wanted to mention the fact that last week we talked a lot about Long Beach State basketball, and a lot more has been happening with Long Beach State basketball. Both men's and women's programs had to be put on pause because of false positive COVID-19 tests over the weekend. We talk about that in everything Long Beach State sports on the LB Fee Show, which we do every other week with Athletic Director Andy Fee.
Tomorrow is Thursday in the Gardabasio household. Well, it's Thursday in every household, but Thursday in the Gardabasio household means it's going to be Naples Rib Company night. I wrote that on the board on Saturday. We do a big takeout night every Thursday, try and support local restaurants, local businesses. And obviously at the top of our list is Naples Rib Company for two reasons. Number one, it's the best barbecue in town. They have a lot of competition, but their ribs don't, as we all know. But also number two, they are supporters of the Long Beach sports scene like no one else. They've supported JJ and I and Tyler for over a decade. They've supported every school and team that's come their way looking for some help. And so now is the time we need to help them out. Obviously, as you know, people cannot eat there, which takes a big bite out of their bottom line. So take a big bite out of the ribs, go pick up some Naples Rib Company like I'm doing on Thursday night, and support a delicious business that also supports us.
We now welcome on our special guest. He's a Long Beach guy. It's CIF Southern Section Commissioner Rob Wygod. Rob, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine, JJ. Good to be with you and Mike and Tyler. I guess I got the whole trifecta today, so good to be with you.
Yeah, it's calling all cars right now. A lot of news, a lot of stuff to handle. So first and foremost, as we do with everybody on the show, how are you doing? You doing all right?
I'm doing fine. And obviously, these are difficult times for all of us. But, you know, there's a responsibility here to provide leadership and direction. And that's what I'm focused on and doing everything I can do really with student athletes in mind and on behalf of them to do all we can to get them to return to play in a healthy and safe way.
So we've talked a little earlier in the show before you were on about sort of what was said in the press conference and the release yesterday. So you can assume that the people listening to this have a working grasp of, you know, the championships being canceled and what all that means. We're hoping to kind of pull the curtain back for people. And we're just wondering, can you just sort of take us inside the Southern Section office, you know, 2 miles away from my house over there on Cotella? What's this last week been like for you guys? What led specifically to this decision? And, you know, how's everyone feeling over there?
Well, we're, you know, still closed. I mean, I'm here today and I'm the only one here and we're still, our office is closed and our staff is not together. And unfortunately, as you may remember, we've actually furloughed 7 members of our staff as of January 1. So it's a definitely different feel. And for those out there who believe that somehow we're not affected, I mean, we're affected tremendously on a professional level and certainly on a personal level. I mean, this is hard to look at people that you care about and the people that are part of this and making this happen and see what's had to be done. So back to the behind the scenes idea, we had been looking at this obviously for a long time. And back in December, when the guidelines from California Department of Public Health came out, finally, in response to the plan that we'd submitted and the different things related to sports in that way, you know, we had to look at what the factors were. First factor, as I spoke about, I think a long time ago, was that league play. For us to conduct section championships, our leagues would have to have the opportunity to conduct, you know, viable league play. And as time has gone closer, and I committed to January 19th is a good date to kind of evaluate that. Well, we haven't started any of our sports in the orange tier by today. So there was really the window for viable league play was going to be difficult. Second thing was travel. Even if the sports were allowed to resume, would we be able to conduct a water polo championship tournament, a volleyball championship tournament, a football championship tournament with student athletes from Los Angeles County traveling to Santa Barbara County, Ventura County students traveling to Riverside County? Were those kind of things going to be allowed? And again, trying to project forward, we didn't see how, if sports were going to return, they would still be limited probably geographically. And that related directly to cross country, where while cross country in the purple tier would begin, hopefully next Monday, would we be able to pick a site? It happens to be in LA County and have 7 counties worth of students and coaches and all travel to that one location and conduct that championship. And so all of that together on one side of the issue was we felt very problematic for those types of championships to be able to happen in the time frame we had remaining. The other point was by removing the section championship dates, the time that was scheduled for those competitions could then be utilized by our schools, our member schools, in the available time left in the fall sports seasons, which run till the end of March, which run for football till April 17. They would then get the opportunity for that time to be used to schedule games, schedule league games, non-league games, games that they've already had to cancel, would then hopefully get a chance to play and get more, as much time as we could possibly, you know, allow for them to play any contest that they can schedule. So that's all kind of together. We were monitoring and tracking all of that for a period of time since I committed to the announcement would be on January 19 as the future of Fall Sports Championships. And we arrived at yesterday and the announcement that we made.
Well, and I wanted to follow up on that, Rob, that last kind of point where you're just providing more time for schools to figure out something that can't develop into a postseason because you, like you said, you need a certain amount of league play to justify a postseason, right? So is that kind of your hope that with this extra time that leagues, especially ones that are contained within one county where things are less messy, that they would be able to put together some league schedules? Have you been in contact with, you know, ADs or, you know, people who are running these leagues to kind of coordinate some of that? Is that something that you would encourage for some league championships, even if we can't get CIF plaques this year?
Absolutely true. And that's been the point here, is now this really does become a school-based decision-making mechanism. When we provide the dates, we provide the structure, then obviously that limits the ability of schools to do certain things because they have to fit into those windows and so forth. So this really does give them the chance to do whatever they think is in the best interest of their schools and their community. And we feel like that was the best that we could do for them with some time. I mean, this announcement means nothing on March 1st. It really limits what schools would be able to do in that smaller window that was left. So by doing it by, I thought, a reasonable time frame, it does give them some flexibility. It still allows for some time to hopefully see us make progress toward getting closer to the sports resuming. And that was the thought process that we used behind that.
What's been the reaction so far to the news of the championship seasons getting canceled?
Well, I think, you know, in some respects, it's kind of unfortunate to say. I'm not sure it was a huge surprise. I think people didn't necessarily believe that there was probably a viable way for us to go forward that way. And I hope people realize, too, in a 108-year-old organization, we have a standard for it. Means something to be a Southern Section champion. And it's an inclusive process. It wouldn't be a true championship standard if it was only involving a smaller percentage of our member schools or counties, if you use that model. So I think from that aspect of it, I think it probably wasn't a big surprise. I think schools realize now that the time is upon us and that unfortunate time is starting to get smaller. So the more opportunity they can have to try to make something work, I would like to think that that was well received. But again, when you balance this against the history of the organization and a lot of the things that we're known for, you know, that's a big thing for us to obviously have to take those championships off the board and those experiences and opportunities for our student athletes away from this group of fall student athletes.
Rob, you know, I want to push a little bit into what I'd asked you about at the press conference yesterday, because I'm sure you see it. I see it all over Facebook. I see it in the Let Us Play protests that happened last Friday. I feel like you've got, you know, 100,000 angry parents and kids across the state of California who have not really been educated, and it's probably a failure of the media more than anyone else, as to what's happening and what these cancellations are being caused by, and just kind of what the power structure is. You know, I saw a ton of people pissed at you guys yesterday, saying, oh, the CIF doesn't want us to play sports or whatever. As you mentioned, obviously, you as well as us, we'd all love for, you know, the virus numbers to be down and things to be proceeding as normal. What I've observed is that the California Department of Public Health, which, you know, never ran to be the CIF state commissioner, but is now in charge of the schools and sports and everything else, they understandably have bigger fish to fry. But it just frankly seems to me that this has not really been a priority for them. I think you mentioned, took 2+ months to respond to your guys' proposal for putting sports together. Tyler's written a story. They've missed their own deadline for their January update, I think, by 2+ weeks now. Can you just comment on first of all, that it is in fact the California Department of Public Health that has their hand on the light switch, right? It's happening or it's not happening. And can you just talk about your frustration with maybe not feeling like they're taking it seriously enough, or just that it just kind of seems like you're out here taking all the fire for someone else's decision?
Well, you're accurate in your description of a lot of what's going on, and it is the word frustration, and it's on several levels. But I think it is disappointing because anyone who believes for 1 second that the Southern Section does not want to see student athletes back playing sports is absolutely misinformed and does not get it, because, as I mentioned, you know, this is affecting us tremendously on the professional level and the personal level. I mean, this is what we do. This is what we are charged with. And so for anyone to think for one second that that's not something that we want to happen is not right about that. And so you're correct in that we're not health professionals, and the health professionals in our state that are responsible for our state are the ones at the California Department of Public Health who set these guidelines and set these policies that we are emboldened to follow. And people don't quite get that. And they believe the CIF has set up the colored tier program. The CIF made the recommendation that football's in the orange tier. And none of that is true. And I don't have necessarily the feeling about how to educate people who won't be educated. I mean, there are people out there that just simply, no matter what you would tell them, won't either take the time to listen or just don't accept it because they already have their own narrative and their own version of it. That's hard. Because I would want everyone to know that we have the best of intentions and that we care deeply about this. This is our livelihood. This is what we do.
Right. If I can just jump in there, I mean, I feel like this is a microcosm, though, of there are a couple of people in the press conference who are sort of making fun of on Twitter. Like, how do people still think this is the CIF's responsibility? And my comment to them was, well, it's our job. It's the media's job to explain who's making the decisions that are affecting people. So I took the events of the last 5 days or so as a real wake-up call to me, frankly, that, you know, I don't think we're doing a good enough job. I've seen the same thing on the education beat with the school districts. You know, yeah. People are furious at the LBUSD superintendent, and she's going, it's illegal for me to open the schools. You know, I think one thing I've heard from her is kind of something I've heard from you is, you know, they created this tier system at the state level to regulate whether we're going to sports bars or whether we're doing our, you know, grocery shopping curbside or inside the store. But schools, and I would argue sports, seem a little bit more like bridges or or streets to me that, you know, should not necessarily be attached to a retail oriented color spectrum. So my question to you is, what is the next step for you personally, or for the Southern Section, or for the CIF state office? How do you advocate to change their minds about that? More things should move up into the purple tier, or that they should do away with the tier system entirely? Like, what's the next action item for you guys?
Well, we believe there's two factors at play. One is the numbers themselves, the two big numbers that everyone's using, the case rate per 100,000 and the positivity rate for those who were tested. So for the first time in several weeks, those numbers started to go down in some of our counties. And that certainly lends for a conversation that can be advanced if we start making some progress, because then that can be linked to the idea that, look, we asked for, and we're health professionals that make up our sports medicine advisory committee, felt we could conduct sports in the red tier. We could do football. We could do volleyball, water polo. We could do them all in the red tier, and provided health and safety protocols of how we would do it. It's not the response we got. So now it's about continuing the conversation, the dialogue, hopefully being able to use the improvement in the numbers along with the hope that there might be some reconsideration so that it gets us closer to returning. And that's really where the effort is. It was a weird dynamic because, again, I think we talked about this in an earlier conversation that, you know, we needed that direct knowledge of what the roadmap was. You know, what does this mean for water polo and volleyball and football and whatever? We got it. And now we've been trying to work on it ever since, because we obviously hoped that we might have a better opportunity in some of those sports. You know, we're going to continue the effort and we're going to continue to advocate. That's all we can do. And that's really where our focus is. And I know there's people that may see it differently and really haven't taken the time to understand it and take their shots and blast away.
If they'd all blast away in the same direction at the people who made the decisions, that's sort of my point as a journalist. Yeah. Is if there's 100,000 people mad about this and they're all talking to the same one person who made the decision, maybe their voices would actually be listened to.
And you know, my goal always has been, I mean, from the moment that I've been in here in this office, and this is my 21st year now, is I've always wanted to be open, honest, and transparent. I mean, I believe in communication. I believe in honest communication, even when it's not what people want to hear, but they deserve your honest, open, and transparent messages that you give. We'll respond. You know, I mean, we're there, we're out there in front. You know, I'm not sure the California Department of Public Health answers the emails that I get, you know, and I do answer them and I do respond to people. And, you know, that can be a good thing because it fits in my philosophy personally. And I believe a philosophy our organization embraces. But when you do that, you know, they know who to get to and they know who to talk to. And that could be sometimes on the other side of it. So, you know, I get it. And I don't do Twitter. I'm not on Twitter. Congrats. I am on Facebook. I do see it. I'm a human being. I'm not going to sit there and say I ignore all these people and they're meaningless. They're not. They're human beings. They're expressing how they feel. Okay. But I just wish they were informed and I wish what they expressed was based on facts and based on the situation as it is versus, you know, sometimes even being personal in what they say. And if anything here, I mean, none of this is personal. I mean, this is about student athletes and doing what we can for student athletes and education-based athletics. And the personal nature of it is, as I said, how it's affected people and how it's affected all of those involved. And I said, I include us. It's affected us too. So, you know, the idea that we sit here detached from everything going on and just go about our business is just simply not true. And so, you know, all we can do is our best effort. I think we try to do that. And I just look forward to getting on the other side of this thing so people aren't going to be talking about stuff like this. And we were talking about who's getting ready to play this week and who's, you know, won their league championship and who's moving on to the playoffs and all the things that we really love to talk about and write about. And then they can criticize the seeding and they can criticize, you know, how we rank the teams and they can criticize how we're biased against their particular school and we don't want their team to be successful. And we can talk about some of those other things where, again, I would offer to you, these are people who are misinformed.
Yeah, I can't wait to stand around and watch 50 coin flips and criticize brackets again. here's to that. Looking forward to that. You know, one point of criticism that a lot of people always bring up is so many other states have returned to play. And obviously, you know, California is, it's unlike a lot of other states for a number of reasons. And obviously the numbers have not been great recently, but you know, I think it's led to a lot of kids and parents looking elsewhere, looking either to club sports, specifically in football is kind of a new phenomenon, or to other states to play. So, you know, what's kind of your message or advice, I guess, to student athletes or to their parents that are looking for opportunities? Maybe they're worried that they're not going to get a chance to play again. Maybe they're a senior in a spring sport that's thinking it might not come back. Maybe I should look to a different state to play. You know, what kind of advice would you give to student athletes in that situation?
I would like to believe that you know, education-based athletics is a special thing. It's unique to us, and I believe it's really something nobody else does. I think any of the folks looking to do other things, whether it's other states or the club environment, are doing so because they don't have the opportunity to do what they really, really want to do. So I look at it that way first. Without us being available to do this, those that want to do it are going to look for other places to try to do it. And it doesn't replace education-based athletics. I'm sorry. I've read what's been talked about with happening on the weekends out on the farm in Chino. That's not Friday Night Lights. There's no student body there. There's no band. There's no cheer team. There's nothing like the community coming out supporting a high school football game. There's nothing like a team of student athletes and coaches who've worked together for months to prepare to go out there as a group and make this effort. This is a group of individual students who are trying to get an opportunity to play the game they love. I won't take that away from them and hopefully maybe get a chance to go on to the next level. But that's not what we are. That's not who we are. So I think there is no replacement for what we have. And anyone who's out there doing this, I think realizes that. The club people realize that. The people playing on the weekends realize that. This is not what they want to be doing. But they are doing
it. That's the number one thing we've heard, you know, and Tyler and I have been out to the farm a couple times, as well as talking to kids and coaches that are doing the thing in Arizona. And that's the number one thing I've heard from them. I know that there are people who have a financial interest in those leagues who think that you know, they'll be able to sort of outgrow the CIF or whatever. But what we've heard from almost everyone we've talked to is, you know, I mean, it's essentially, I point them at the CDPH, but they're just like, this is the only thing we have. I mean, we, you know, they're aware there's a big difference between 7 p.m. at Veterans Memorial Stadium with 6,000 people there and being parked on, you know, on farmland, as you said, right? But it does feel a little bit like I miss hugging my mom. We all miss doing things the way we normally do them, but we're all making the adjustments and accepting the sort of half experiences that are available to us. And I agree with you that those moves to me are being made more so out of a kind of a desperation than a seeking to sort of go outside of high school sports permanently.
Yeah, but I don't believe that again, that it replaces what we have. And I would say that, and I believe that those that I've spoken to and those who are involved in this, they're not going to find it in these other places, but they're going to find whatever they can find because there's nothing for them in the education-based athletics world at the moment. And that's the deal. What people still don't realize is the guidelines for youth sports are the same for club programs as they are for high school. So those who believe that somehow the
well, they're not the same because they're only being enforced for a high school.
Right, but no one's enforcing
it. Written down guidelines are the same, yeah,
no,
yes.
I learned really quickly in this job 21 years ago when I started as assistant commissioner, if you don't have consequences for rules violations, you don't have any rules. So the rules that are out there that are not being enforced and dealt with by the public health department in anywhere that this is happening, there are no rules. And we understand that. But I think where people think that there are different sets of rules for high school and non-high school, they're not. And the thing that I would also offer, and I think you guys have reported on it too, you know, high school athletic programs allow access to everyone. And it's regardless of your socioeconomic status, it's regardless of your race, your language, your religion, anything else that you believe, you have that opportunity in high school and education-based athletics. And that may not necessarily be the case in a club program. Now, I know there's efforts being made. And as I said, you have been clear about discovering those that are trying to provide the opportunity at no charge or very, very nominal fee and still right. So kids get a chance.
But that's not everybody. No, it's not.
There's
people out there with custom uniforms and
coming in on a
big private bus that someone had to pay for, right? Yeah.
So back to the point, you know, that we are in the high school education-based athletics world do provide the access to everyone, which is why it's so vitally important for us to be allowed to operate healthy and safe following protocols. And that's the message we continue to take to the California Department of Public Health is, look, we're the ones that will follow the rules. We're the ones that have access to everyone. We're the ones that can give everyone the opportunities. Give us a chance. Give us the chance to do it. We will do it right. If we have hiccups, problems, issues, we will correct them and go forward doing them right. And then it gets done in the way it needs to be done versus a more select, those that have access, those that do not, those that can do things unregulated, those that can. It's created a real issue, a real frustration, of course, on many levels, as I said. And the response to doing something about it has been very slow in coming. So we can't give up. We can't stop. We can't believing in what we believe in and trying to represent what we are, who we are, and who we do it for. And that's just going to continue. And if people believe, you know, you're not getting it done, Well, it's not for lack of trying. Because, you know, since March, I mean, there are times where in the normal flow of a year, there are those very, very busy times. There are some times that, you know, kind of back off a little bit. Things are a little quieter, you know, summertime in July, the schools aren't open, that kind of thing. There has been no such thing since March. There has been no let up here. There has been no downtime where, you know, you might get away for a little while from what's happening with the world of high school athletics. This has been a constant daily situation that's had to be managed and dealt with and addressed virtually every single day since the middle of March and the initial shutdown. And that's 10 months now that we've been in this fight, if you want to call it, in this effort, whatever description you want to use. And we'll go as long as we need to go until we get it back to what we are all, you know, used to and what we know and love.
Rob, my phone was blowing up all weekend with people texting me, hey, did you hear that this high school football team is playing this high school football team in Orange County this weekend? Also, don't tell anybody that I told you. So it's secretive, but it's not secretive. Everybody knows about it, but nobody wants to talk about it. Is the CIF Southern Section going to do anything about these quote unquote official football games in the OC?
Well, we have. We had to take some time. I had expectations over the weekend of what I was going to be involved in preparing for Tuesday's announcement. And yet, you know, an incredible amount of my time over the weekend was I woke up Saturday morning to find out that there was a game supposedly on Friday, and then we had another one on Saturday. So we spent a lot of time gathering information, which included my opportunity to speak to every one of the principals at the schools or their athletic director. And, you know, I think that we really had to go deep into what happened, why it happened, how it happened, was there intent, what was the situation. And I think what we've done going forward is really clarified everything from their end of it, our end of it. The statement that came out from the CIF state office yesterday to all 1600 member high schools in the CIF is very clear in saying that this cannot happen. And if it does, then obviously there are some very serious conversations that would take place down the road. But as for what happened last weekend, I think we're understanding of how it happened, what the intent behind it was, where maybe some of the misunderstanding was from some of the schools involved. You know, we believe we've closed the book on last weekend and have focused on what's coming forward, because if it is to happen again, so to speak, from this point forward, that's a completely different conversation now that everyone's received the same directive and everyone understands clearly what the guidelines are and the rules that need to be followed are.
Speaking of directives, I wanted to clear up, can these leagues and schools play each other intra-districtly? Like, can two districts come together and try to figure out a way where two leagues might be able to join together and get more games in?
Right. And I think, JJ, that's the point, that without section championships, if leagues aren't able to function, you know, there might be a school district, a multiple school district league where, you know, the districts are on different pages and there's different things happening, then that absolutely does allow for the flexibility of games to be scheduled with whoever you wish to schedule. So, you know, leagues may want to stay intact. They want to try to do at least league championships and keep that format. But if they find they can't, or they just, it doesn't work for them, there might be distance or travel or other issues among schools in the same league, and there's schools closer they could play. You know, those things all become possible now in whatever serves the school and the league in their interest. So that was, again, just a related piece of why the announcement was made yesterday and with the time remaining, that schools would have maximum flexibility to try to provide as many opportunities as they can for student athletes.
We did talk to Lisa Ulmer, the Moore League secretary, the day that your guys' release came out. And she agreed with my assessment, which was, you know, it's frankly, the Moore League is very lucky to have a full-time secretary like Lisa, and that six of the seven schools are in one school district, because, you know, she was flat out like, whatever we can do, we'll do. You know, I mean, she was ready to go. She, the athletic director's already talked about it. I think they're having a Moore League meeting right now while we're doing this interview. So that's good. But I know, you know, when we were at the Press Telegram, some of the leagues we covered, the Suburban League, the SGVL, you might not have two schools that are in the same school district, you know? And it's just, I mean, respectfully, good luck, you know?
I was just going to say that because, you know, I'll never forget walking into a San Gabriel Valley League meeting and there's, you know, like six schools and five different school districts. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Good luck, man.
Well, trying to coordinate, you know, spring break and you know, holiday schedules, you know, for spring sports when you've got five different school districts with maybe three or four different timeframes that they take off for spring break. And I was like, you know, because again, most of my background and most of my life has been in the Moore League with primarily the Long Beach Unified School Districts and Compton. So, you know, so much was able to be accomplished just because six of the seven schools had a commonality, whereas some of our leagues, as you know, that's a local one that you're aware of. Well, we've got plenty of those in other areas of our section that, you know, some of them that are mixed up with private and public schools in the same league too. So there's just, you know, there's going to be some of that, I'm sure, going forward with different districts and decisions that they make. And that's why, again, just the ability of schools to try to do what they can do for their student athletes and have the maximum flexibility available to them. We just felt like that was something that if we could help them, you know, get there, then that's what we were going
to
do.
We mentioned earlier about the response, and we asked people online to give us some questions, and we got some good ones. I pulled two of them. One of them comes from Sean Nolan on Facebook, and they ask, why didn't the Southern section follow the lead of the San Diego section and swap swimming and diving with water polo?
Yeah, I saw it too. I saw Sean Nolan was pretty strong on that one. And my response is this, you know, we've set up this calendar since July, and the one thing we had was stability. People knew what the schedules are going to be, and they had to get the schedules adjusted and combine three seasons into two, all of that goes with it. our spring sports is a really high priority because they're the ones that lost 2/3 of their season last year. And the thought of taking swimming now, let's say moving it up to February 1st. Okay, fine. It can get started. It's going to start in a dual meet format. We don't know how long it would go. If the water polo season moves and let's say it can get started on April 1st, what happens to the swim season that started February 1st with water polo in April? Are the swimmers now going to move over and start playing water polo? You're now sharing two seasons, swimming and water polo, in the same facility, boys and girls in both, multiple levels of teams in both. How are you going to work the facilities issues out? There needs to be a separation between those two seasons, and they are separated right now. To move swimming up and then potentially no guarantee water polo will come either. But if it does come, now you're going to put it right smack in the middle of what the swimming season's already are restarted. So, you know, we looked at it. We had long discussions here with our swim administrator, water polo administrator, with some of our advisory committees. And, you know, we just felt like, you know, to take the swimmers and move them out of what they were hopefully going to get a chance to do when they already had that happen to them last year. We just didn't think that was the appropriate decision for us. Other sections may have done it. You know, that's their prerogative to do it. But, you know, I get the question, but I think we're doing the best we can for both swimming and water polo to leave them with their original schedules and hope that they'll both be able to have something in place, you know, when the time comes.
We also got an email from a reader named Michelle who's got kids in the Long Beach Unified School District. And she wanted to know, where can parents and student athletes find more information, and kind of more like, should they be looking out for breaking news from the CIF Southern section, or should everybody just hunker down and wait until the summer and then see what happens?
Well, one thing I've tried to do is, I think since March, is almost every couple of weeks, I send out a Southern Section update, and we put that directly to our member schools, and we post it on our social media platforms so the public can see those. And that's really been, I thought, you know, my best and most effective way of trying to communicate to everyone what's happening with the Southern Section and or state and or CDPH and other entities involved. So, I mean, that's been our primary way of getting information out. So I think, you know, like our social media platform, you know, become a member of our YouTube channel subscription. Like yesterday's press conference was there for everyone on the YouTube channel. So we are trying in all ways to communicate as best we can with developments as they happen. Every Tuesday, we've been putting out the latest California Department of Public Health information on the tiers and the counties, and unfortunately it hasn't changed much, but it's still coming out every week. And so, as I said, I hope we're making a pretty solid effort to communicate what's happening as much as we can, and certainly as the developments warrant.
We did get one additional question via Twitter from Ron Antoinette, who I think you may or may not know Ron. He asked, and actually I had the same question. I think I heard you sort of obliquely address it yesterday during the press conference. You guys had the end dates for all these different sports set up with the idea that there would be championships there, where you have to stagger staffing, you know, and everything else to pull all those events off. Are you going to go to a later uniform date for all of these sports that have had their championships canceled, say at April 30th or something, to give them more time to do league stuff? Or are you going to stick to the dates that were already there?
Well, right now we're sticking to the dates. And the reason for that is we have a very ambitious list of spring sports. And those sports already were a big enough challenge in trying to get them to fit and get schedules done, and obviously try to keep opportunities available to students who want to participate in more than one sport. So to take the season one sports, continually push them back and encroach further into what's already been a difficult job in the spring, we didn't feel was the most prudent way to go forward. The one thing also to remember is those dates were playoff dates, and each week that the playoffs go on, you have less and less teams and less students involved as you culminate at the end. Well, now that's not the case. I mean, if football teams want to keep playing till April 17th, that would have been normally 20 schools in the entire state. Well, that could be 200 schools now. And that'll be up to schools again, as to what they want to do. So I just think we felt like we were going to have a deep enough impact to start with in the spring. Now, without section championships in the fall, that ability for students to be in more than one sport will change. And then if we extend them even further, you know, that just exacerbates the issue. So we're going to stick to the dates right now. And again, monitoring what's happening, hopefully that this time frame is going to get a chance to be utilized, and some of this is going to happen. That's the plan right now.
Incredibly useful information from Rob Wygod, as always. Thank you so much for taking the time, Rob. We are lucky to have you. We're just not envious of your job right now. So hang in there.
Well, I appreciate you guys, and I really do. Thank you. I'm always happy to get on and talk and discuss what's happening. So, you know, we're here, and I'm always available to do anything I can to help you. So I will never, ever miss a deadline of anything, because I know Tyler is very, very conscious of that. And I commend him for that. People should be. If I'd have missed yesterday's deadline, you know, believe me, I would deserve every bit of condemnation for that. I'm a big believer. If you say you're going to do it, then do it. I know that's been frustrating for people too. So again, my thanks to you and your family. Stay well, stay safe. And I look forward to next time we get together.
We also want to shout out our newest sponsor, Ocean Law Center. Thank you to Ocean Law Center for their support of Long Beach sports coverage, helping injured people and their families. Visit oceanlawcenter.com for more information on the services they provide.
Boy, I was feeling good about my NFL picks last weekend, guys. One problem, interceptions, especially those returned for touchdowns. I was on track to win all four of my bets, but fourth quarter interceptions sunk 2 out of 4. 4 alive, and 2 of them were just like, oh, nope, that's a pick 6. You're done.
I feel like we're doing pretty good, though. We're up on the playoffs, yes?
Yes.
We've been providing you good counsel.
And honestly, like, if Lamar Jackson doesn't get hurt in that game, and obviously we hope he's okay, that outcome's most likely going to be very different, right? I mean, but that's the thing about the margins here are very thin, and that's a precarious warning about anyone who engages in sports betting. You just simply don't know.
But that's also the popularity of football, right? Is that you can have such big swings and such moments. That's the popularity as a sport, but also for gambling on it. I tried to get into betting on basketball because I've been so into the NBA the last couple of years, but it feels like math. You know, I mean, it's just all the margins are too thin. It's all averages and everything else. Football, it's like, if you had bet the other way, you would have been coming out of your shoes with excitement over that pick six. You know what I mean? Like, that's the fun of football, that you don't have, you know, 25% possibly of a team's point scored in 4 seconds at the end of a game. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So this week, championship weekend, great games last weekend. I expect some more great games this weekend, and two very interesting lines. Common knowledge is that 3 points is what you get for being at home in the NFL. So when the Vegas line layers go to a game, they immediately give the home team 3 points, and then they figure it out from there. Both games this weekend are 3-point spreads for the home team. So technically, Vegas is saying, this is a pick 'em. We're just going to give the advantage to the home team. Some fans are there, so there is a little bit of home field advantage, but obviously not what we've seen in the past. So, yeah, Green Bay at home hosting Tampa Bay -3, and then KC at home hosting Buffalo -3. Those could move because of injuries and availability, and we'll get to that, obviously. But I just find it fascinating. They're just like, we don't know. Just figure it out yourself.
I did want to note, because I think we've talked a couple of times in this podcast about what constitutes home field advantage, what that's made of. And as the fans have gone away, we've seen that in pretty much every sport, the home field advantage has disappeared. Football and basketball are both right about 50% each team, you know, this year. And so I just wanted to note that, because if it was weather, the weather is still the same. If it was the, you know, shooting in someone else's gym, that's still happening. It really is the theory that the book Scorecasting had advanced that I subscribed to, was it's the sheer societal psychological pressure on officials when 30,000 people want them to do something. That just makes up that 6% bump towards the home team that we normally see. And that, you know, the fans are absolutely obviously the thing that is not the same this year. So worth noting that the weather, I think, will still be a pretty significant storyline in that Green Bay Tampa Bay game, with the home Packers, who are kind of used to that weather, going up against 43-year-old Tom Brady. And let me tell you guys, I was up in the snow a couple weekends ago as a 36-year-old, and boy, I don't know, man. I don't know. That might be a step too far, even for the nano bubbles.
Yeah, Mike, your personal healthcare routine does not have Tom Brady money. So it's, I just feel different. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Tom Brady is Naples Rib Company 7 days a week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, can I call, I don't know if you guys watch Schitt's Creek, but I kind of want to call this the Moira Rose matchup, the Bebe matchup, Green and Tampa. I'm surprised that that's only a 3-point spread. I mean, I guess they were people were impressed with Tampa Bay's performance in the dome, which obviously was a great performance. But I also just feel like I saw, unfortunately, Drew Brees that was not Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers is not suffering from that affliction at the moment. So he looks like the best player on the planet. So I think that's just a Green Bay straight up, right? I mean, you're laying 3 points as the Packers, right?
1,000,000%. The Packers are my Super Bowl winner before the playoffs started. I think that we will see in this game and, you know, and in the Super Bowl that they're just one of the best offenses ever, to be completely honest with you. Aaron Rodgers doing stuff we've never seen. I probably would have taken them minus a much larger number than 3, to be completely honest with you.
I'm going to stay the course betting wise. We've done the teasers for the first 2 weekends. If you tease these two games, you can get it to +3 for the two home teams. You can tease it 6 points. So you're betting the two games together. So Green Bay would be +3 and Kansas City would be +3. I feel real good getting points at home from those two offenses.
You feel good getting +3 on Aaron Rodgers and Pat Mahomes? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and co-sign on that tease, JJ.
But I'd almost rather just only get the points for the Chiefs. It would feel like I would rather have all the points for the Chiefs rather than getting the extra 3 for the Packers, just because I feel better about them. You know, I don't know. I still think, as we've talked about, that there's a certain level of the Chiefs are very carefree in a lot of their games, and it may come back to bite them. And I think the Bills are good enough to make that happen. And they're the feel good storyline. And obviously that was what I had picked when we kind of started breaking down playoffs, was Bills Packers to make it. So, I mean, crazier things have happened, certainly.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying I don't want to see the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl again. That would be awesome. And our picks for the Super Bowl
lose again
are all still alive. Yeah, man, it's kind of their thing, you know? So we'll see this weekend, and then we have to wait, what is it, 2-3 weeks until the Super Bowl's played? I know they wanted to give themselves that week just in case they had to shut it down for COVID-19 purposes, but geez, it feels like you're going to have to wait a month between the championship games and the bowl.
They should have trusted how willing they were to blindly charge forward through any health considerations to finish the season out. They did not need the extra week. They showed at a couple different junctures, including one involving the Pittsburgh Steelers that we followed very closely, that nothing was going to force them to screw with the end of the season to make those TV channels resell their ads.
True. It's such a tough scenario, because could you imagine, and obviously I don't want this to happen by any stretch, but if you're 3 days before the Super Bowl and Aaron Rodgers tests positive, I mean, that is a doomsday nightmare scenario for the NFL, obviously. Is there a way that they can quarantine these teams and do a quick makeshift bubble?
I believe, like,
what's
believe
the plan
they are
there?
Bubbling.
I mean, is that what they're doing?
I believe they are in a mini bubble for the Super Bowl once they're locked in. I think that was the plan, to allow them that. And that is what the extra week will serve for, obviously, is just to give them that extra space. If someone comes into the bubble with it, that they can isolate it. And provided there's no further medical complications, you know, be good to go. But listen, there's no scenario in the world where Aaron Rodgers or Pat Mahomes or one of those quarterbacks is going to miss the Super Bowl due to COVID. Even if they have COVID, I don't think that the NFL would allow them to miss the game. Just like I don't think the NFL is going to keep Pat Mahomes in the concussion protocol ahead of the AFC championship game. You know, at the end of the day, and I don't think Pat Mahomes would want to, you know, as well. I mean, I think that these guys signed up to play, to work 9 months to get into these one or two games. And, you know, as we know, we've known quite a few NFL guys, that Ronnie Lott story about him having surgery to cut off part of his finger so he didn't have to miss practice. He might be the only dude who would have had that surgery to stay in practice, but a lot of NFL players would have that surgery to play in an AFC or NFC championship game.
Yeah. Let's just hope that the final decision is made by a medical professional and not like a Roger Goodell or Andy Reid, or even, you want to say, a Patrick Mahomes.
I don't have enough hope. They're in place to protect these athletes. I don't have enough hope to spend my hope on that.
For sure. Somewhere, Justin Turner's like, if only I was an NFL quarterback, I could have been on the field for the end of this championship game. What the heck? Stay tuned. We're going to have all of the coverage from Long Beach Sports available at the 562.org this weekend. And let us know who you think, who you got in these championship games, and we'll be able to watch them together on Sunday. So for Mike and for Tyler and for JJ and everybody at the Long Beach Post and the 562.org, thank you for listening. Hang tough, Long Beach. We'll talk to you soon.